The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 32, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Affair of the Red-Headed League. Episode 2, The Case of the Politician, the Lighthouse, and the Trained Cormorant. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by John Stanley as Sherlock Holmes and Alfred Shirley as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Cy Harris.
Of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the dramatizations are by Edith Meiser. Now, once more, we are about to visit Dr. Watson, the friend and chronicler of Sherlock Holmes and his amazing adventures. We find him sitting in his well-worn armchair, an eager look on his face and a humorous twinkle in his eye. Can it be that the good doctor is beginning to look forward to his weekly appearances before the microphone?
Good evening, Mr. Harris. It certainly can. And tonight I have my narrative all picked out. Have you ever noticed that red-headed people always seem to lead very eventful lives? Look at Queen Elizabeth.
Yes, and I've heard that Cleopatra was a breaktop, too, and she certainly had very few dull moments. And now, Dr. Watson, shall we get back to our story?
Yes, indeed. Well, tonight I have decided to tell you the story of the Red-Headed League.
The Red-Headed League? What a curious title.
No more curious than the situation it gave rise to in Sherlock Holmes' life. One day, it was during the autumn of the year 1890, I burst in upon my friend to find him deep in conversation with a stout, florid-faced gentleman with the fiercest red hair it has ever been my privilege to observe. I was about to withdraw when Holmes pulled me abruptly into the room and closed the door behind me.
Come in, my dear Watson, come in. You couldn't possibly have come at a better time.
But Holmes, I was afraid you were engaged.
So I am, my dear fellow. Allow me, Mr. Wilson, this is my friend and helper, Dr. Watson.
Well, how do you do, sir?
Oh, how do you do?
Sit down, Watson, sit down. I know that you share my love of the bizarre, although you've never agreed that for the strangest effects and most extraordinary combinations, we must go to life itself.
Well, you know,
Mr. Jabez Wilson here has just started a narrative which promises to be one of the most singular I've listened to for some time.
Dear me.
Now, my dear Mr. Wilson, perhaps you would have the great kindness to recommence your story.
Certainly, Mr. Holmes. As soon as I can find that newspaper clipping, how would I put it? I could have sworn it was in my waistcoat.
Watson, while we're waiting for Mr. Wilson to find his missing newspaper advertisement, suppose you tell me what you deduce from his appearance.
Well, really, you know. Let me see. I would say he was middle-aged, if you don't mind my saying. And, he has red hair.
Oh, obvious, Watson. Too obvious. I will come to your assistance. He has at some time done manual labor. He's a Freemason, has been in China, and has done a considerable amount of writing lately.
Well, Mr. Holmes, you fair give me the creeps. Are you one of these mind readers?
No, indeed.
Then how in the name of good fortune did you know all that about me? About the manual labor, for example. It's as true as gospel. I began as a ship's carpenter.
Your hands, my dear sir. Your right hand is quite a size larger than your left. The muscles are more developed. As for the Freemasonry, you wear a square and compass tie-pin.
Oh, I see that. But the writing, how about that?
What else can be indicated by that right cuff, so very shiny, and the left sleeve with a smooth patch near the elbow where you rest it on the desk?
Well, about China.
The fish that you've had tattooed immediately above your right wrist could only have been done in China. That trick of staining the fish's scales a delicate pink is quite peculiar to China. And when, in addition, I see a Chinese coin hanging from your watch chain, the matter becomes even more simple.
Well, I never. At first, I thought you'd done something clever. But now I see there's nothing to it after all.
I begin to think, Watson, that I make a mistake in explaining. Omni ignotum pro magnifico, you know.
Oh, yes, of course.
What reputation I may have will suffer shipwreck if I'm so candid. Have you found the advertisement, Mr. Wilson?
Yes, I've got it now. It was in my watch pocket. This is what began it all, sir. You just read it for yourself.
Watson, suppose you do that for us.
Yes, with pleasure.
First, make a note of the paper and the date.
It's the Morning Chronicle of July the 27th, 1890. It's just 2 months ago.
Very well, proceed with the advertisement.
It begins to the Red-Headed League. On account of the bequest of the late Ezekiel Hopkins, there is now another vacancy open which entitles a member of the League to a salary of £4 a week for purely nominal services. All red-headed men above the age of 21 years are eligible. That's very odd. Apply in person on Monday at 11 o'clock to Duncan Ross at the offices of the League, 7 Pope's Court, Fleet Street. Dear me, Holmes, what on earth does this mean?
I think I promised you that this case was bizarre. Now, Mr. Wilson, if you'll continue with your story.
Well, it's just about as I was telling you, Mr. Holmes. I have a small pawnbroker's shop at Coburg Square. Of late years, the business has been pretty bad. I used to be able to keep 2 assistants, but now I only keep 1. I'd have a job to pay him, only he's willing to come for half wages so as to learn the business.
Obliging youth. What's his name?
Vincent Spaulding. And I couldn't want a smarter assistant, Mr. Holmes. Oh, I know he could easily earn twice what I'm able to give him. But, well, as I say, if he's satisfied, who am I to go putting ideas into his head?
Yeah, your assistant seems to be as remarkable as your advertisement.
He only has one fault, Mr. Holmes. Photography. Snapping away with his camera, then diving down into the cellar like a rabbit into its hole to develop his pictures.
An amateur photographer, eh? He's still with you, I suppose.
Oh, yes, sir. An observing young fellow he is. He was the one that brought this advertisement to my notice. It was just this day, 8 weeks, when he rapped on my office door with this very paper in his hand. Come in.
Oh, Mr. Wilson, sir.
Oh, that's you, Vincent. Well, what's the matter? You look excited.
Oh, I wish to the Lord, Mr. Wilson, I was a red-headed man.
Why that?
Well, look here, sir. What it says in this paper. There's another vacancy in the League of the Red-Headed Men. It's worth a pretty penny to him that gets it.
The Red-Headed League? I never heard of it.
Never heard of the League of the Red-Headed Men? Oh, Mr. Wilson. And you eligible for one of the vacancies.
Huh? What are they worth?
Oh, merely a couple of hundred a year. But the work is slight and it needn't interfere much with one's regular occupation.
Yeah, a couple of hundred pounds a year, you say? Here, let me see that paper, young man.
Oh, here you are, sir. You see, as far as I can make out, the League was started by a millionaire named Ezekiel Hopkins, a red-headed man himself. And he left his fortune in the hands of the trustees with instructions to provide easy berths to men who had red hair. And from what I hear, the work isn't difficult.
Yeah, but there must be millions of red-headed men.
Oh, not so many as you might think, sir. You see, it's confined to Londoners.
Oh.
And then again, it's no use if your hair is light red or dark red or anything but real blazing fire red. They've got to pick the reddest hair they can find.
Well, if there's a redder head of hair than mine in the length and breadth of London, I'd like to see it.
Well, I have seen a few that I consider redder.
What? Nonsense. Here, where's my hat?
What are you going to do, Mr. Wilson?
I'm going around to apply for that vacancy. If it was raining gold, no one can say that Jabez Wilson is a man to go out with a sieve.
And did you get the job, Mr. Wilson?
I did that, Mr. Holmes. There wasn't a head of hair that can touch mine for redness, if I do say it myself. There was thousands competing.
And what was the work?
Well, purely nominal, like the paper said. And it paid £4 a week, regular as a clock. All I had to do was to sit at a desk in an office at that address there from 10 to 2 and copy out bits from the encyclopedia.
Educational as well as remunerative. And how long did this work continue?
Oh, about 8 weeks. I was pretty well through the A's. Abbots, archery, architecture, and the like. Then suddenly it came to an end. I went to my work, 10 o'clock as usual. The door was shut and locked, and a card was nailed on the door.
What did it say?
The Red-Headed League dissolved September 27th, 1890.
But I say, Holmes, that's today.
This very morning it was, sir. Well, I lost no time trying to find the man that hired me. £4 a week's £4, you know.
You say you tried to find the man that rented the office?
Yes, sir. I inquired from the renting agent, and he gave me the man's name and said that he'd moved to a new address.
You went there, of course.
Yes, sir.
Well?
Well, when I got to that address, it was a manufactory of artificial kneecaps. And no one had ever heard of the Red-Headed League.
So then you came straight to me?
Yes, sir. I thought it best not to lose any time.
Quite right. By the way, Mr. Wilson, this assistant of yours, Mr. Vincent Spaulding, how long had he been with you when he called your attention to the Red-Headed League?
About a month.
How did he come?
In answer to an advertisement.
Was he the only applicant?
No, sir. Oh, I had a dozen.
Why did you pick him?
Because he was handy and would come cheap. At half wages, in fact.
Hmm. What's he like?
Small, stout built, very quick in his ways. No hair on his face, though he's not short of 30. And he has a white splash of acid on his forehead.
I thought as much. Have you ever noticed that his ears are pierced for earrings?
Why, yes. He says a gypsy did it for him when he was a lad.
Watson, what day of the week is it?
Why, Saturday, of course.
Saturday, dear me, so it is. Well, Mr. Wilson, I think I may promise you some startling developments by tonight. In the meantime, Watson, I suggest we drop around sometime this afternoon to view the attractions of Saxe Coburg Square, Mr. Wilson's exemplary assistant in particular.
Well, here we are, Holmes. This seems to be Saxe Coburg Square.
Shabby, genteel little backwater of a place. This, I fancy, is our friend's shop. The four-story building with the three gilt balls over it. Yes, the square itself seems fairly uninteresting, eh?
Yes, very depressing.
Let's see what street backs onto it on this side. Come along, Watson.
Can't see what difference the next street can make to our problem, if it is a problem. Well, the whole thing sounds more like a practical joke to me.
A practical joke which costs its perpetrator £4 a week? Nonsense, Watson. No man's sense of humor resides in his pocketbook.
Well, this street seems to have more life.
It's one of the chief arteries leading to the north and west. Now, let me see. What's the order of the houses here?
Order?
Yes, it's a hobby of mine to have an exact knowledge of London. First, we have Mortimer's. Then the tobacconist, the little newspaper shop, the Coburg branch of the City and Suburban Bank, the vegetarian restaurant, and McFarlane's Carriage Works. Yes, now we can go back to the shop of our friend, Mr. Wilson.
Oh, what's the hurry, Holmes? Don't walk so fast.
Found out all I want to here.
Holmes, you act as if you were taking a memory course. Why should you want to know all the shops on that street? It's just a waste of time.
Nothing that exercises the brain is a waste of time, my dear Watson. The trouble with most of us is that our brains have become flabby from lack of proper use.
Rubbish. Well, here we are, back again. Why are you thumping on the pavement with your cane, Holmes? If you want to enter the shop, why not knock on the door?
Yes, quite so, Watson. I'm afraid my etiquette is a bit faulty lately, so just to please you, I will knock on the door.
I see. Someone's coming on the double.
Looks like our bright little assistant.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. Won't you step in?
Thank you, no. I only wish to ask you how to go from here to the Strand.
Third right, fourth left.
Smart fellow there, eh, Watson?
Well, I see no signs of a colossal intelligence.
Nevertheless, he is, in my judgment, the fourth smartest mind in London. As for daring, I'm not sure that he's not the third.
I see nothing so startling about him.
The knees of his trousers, Watson. Didn't you notice?
No, what about them?
Most enlightening, my dear Watson. Most enlightening.
Oh, this is so much balderdash. I just about had enough of it. I'm going to have myself a cup of coffee and some cake. There's an appetizing little bake shop across the way.
Very good, Watson. Suppose you meet me back here at 10 tonight. Sharp, mind you. And kindly put your army revolver in your pocket.
Oh.
This business is serious. More serious even than I expected.
Say, Holmes, it's 10 o'clock now. How long do we have to stand here in this confounded rain? I'm soaked to the skin.
Until the other member of our party turns up, Watson.
Oh.
Ah, here comes the cab. Yes, I think he'll be in it. Yes. Good evening, Mr. Merriweather.
Look here, Holmes. Why do you have to rout me out on a night like this? Saturday night, too. I shall miss my rubber of whist. It's the first Saturday night for 27 years I've not had my whist.
My dear Merriweather, I think you'll find that tonight you're playing for higher stakes than even you are accustomed to. And I can promise the play will be more exciting.
Oh, indeed.
But come, we must hurry.
Bless you.
Oh, I beg your pardon. This is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
Oh, how do you do, sir?
This way, gentlemen.
But where are we going? Mr. Wilson's shop is here on the square.
Stop burbling, Watson. Follow me and don't waste time.
In your message to me, Holmes, you said something about John Clay, the murderer, thief, smasher, and forger.
John Clay? Who is he?
My dear Watson, John Clay is one of our most colorful and dangerous criminals. A young man, but at the head of his profession. I'd rather have my bracelets on him than on any criminal in London.
And I've heard that his grandfather was a duke, and he himself had been educated in Oxford and Eton.
Yes, he'll crack a crib in Scotland Yard one week and be raising money to build an orphanage in Cornwall the next.
We've been on his track for years, Mr. Holmes, and have never set eyes on him.
Well, I trust I may have the pleasure of introducing you tonight. Here we are. Down this narrow passageway. You better let me go first.
Look here, Holmes. I don't like the looks of this at all. This passage goes underground. Gives me the creeps. Oh, I say, I've run into something.
The wall, I fancy. I forgot to warn you. There's a turn here to the right.
Yes, I found that out. Thanks so much.
Ah, here's the door. Just a moment till I light my dark lantern. There. Now, Mr. Merriweather, if you'll unlock the door for us.
Just a moment till I find my key. Here we are.
Better let me go first, sir, in case we're too late. Yes. The coast seems clear enough. Come along, both of you.
Holmes, I don't like the look of this place. Your lantern throws such weird shadows. It smells like a vault.
It is a vault, my dear Watson. The basement of the City and Suburban Bank, to be exact, of which our friend, Mr. Merriweather, here is president.
But what are all those wooden crates doing here?
They explain why the most daring criminal in London is taking such an interest in this particular place.
Yes, Dr. Watson. These crates contain our French gold.
French gold?
Quite. You see, we had occasion some months ago to borrow 30,000 napoleons from France.
France? Of all things.
Most of which has never been unpacked.
Rather an inducement for any thief.
Oh, really, Mr. Holmes, I think you're rather unduly excited. Now, after all, the building is guarded by 10 burly watchmen.
Yes, I dare say you're not particularly vulnerable from above.
Nor from below, Mr. Holmes. Nothing but solid earth below these flagstones. Listen to this.
Don't do that, Mr. Merriweather. You want to ruin all our plans?
But look here, I say, it did sound hollow.
Not so loud, please. Now then, I think we'd better take up our positions. You, Merriweather, behind those large boxes in the corner.
Yes.
Watson and I will hide behind this crate. I hope you appreciate the honor, my dear Watson, This crate contains no less than 2,000 golden napoleons, neatly packed in tinfoil.
Good heavens.
Are you ready? We must put the screen over my dark lantern.
And sit here in the dark?
Certainly.
Oh, dear. And I brought a deck of cards with me. I thought we might have time for a three-handed rubber.
Not tonight, Mr. Merriweather. We're dealing with a dangerous man. And unless we can take him at a disadvantage, he may do us considerable harm. One thing more. When I flash my light, Watson, close in swiftly. And if he reaches for his gun, shoot. And shoot to kill.
Oh, dear me. I wish I'd stayed at home.
Quiet. I'm going to cover the light.
Imagine all sorts of horrors sitting here in the dark like this.
Quiet, Merriweather.
Holmes, did you hear that? Look, there in the middle of the floor, a slit of light. Why, someone's raising one of the stone slabs. Look, there's a hand.
Catch his hands before he can put himself through the opening.
Righto.
Quick, Watson! Look out, he's got a knife!
Take your hands off me!
No, you don't! You...
Oh, if I can get my hand from...
Why, well done, Holmes, well done. Why, you've knocked him out.
Good. Drag him up here. Now, Mr. Merriweather, if you'll give us some light.
Of course.
That's better.
But I say, Holmes, it's that Vincent Spaulding chap, Mr. Wilson's assistant.
Spaulding rubbish. This is John Clay, one of the most dangerous criminals in London. I've been after him for years. Help me search him, Watson.
Well, look out, Holmes. He's coming, too.
Take your filthy hands off me, you scarecrow.
Yeah, now, none of that.
You may not be aware that I have royal blood in my veins. When you address me, have the goodness to say, sir, and please.
Oh, very well. Would you please, sir, march yourself upstairs, sir, where we can hand you over to the policemen who are anxiously awaiting your Highness's arrival. And be quick about it. Better have another spot of whiskey, Watson.
Oh, thanks. Feels good to get onto dry clothes again after sitting around in that cold cellar for hours. Not so much, Holmes. Do you want to drown me?
God bless you, my dear fellow.
Thank you. I say, Holmes, when did you first begin to suspect that fellow Spaulding? I mean, Clay.
When Wilson told me he was anxious to work for half price. Always suspect anyone or anything that comes too cheap. There's sure to be a motive behind it.
But how did you guess what the motive was? In this case, I mean.
I suspected his fondness for photography and his trick of vanishing into the cellar. The cellar. There was the end of this tangled clue. And why was someone so anxious to have our friend Mr. Wilson kept out of his shop for several hours every day? Activities in the cellar again. By the way, that red-headed league hoax is one of the cleverest dodges I've come across in some time. Too clever, in fact. When I heard of it, I knew there was only one man who could have originated it. John Clay. We've had our skirmishes, but this is the first time we've come face to face.
Sir, you went around to have a look at the shop.
At his trousers, Watson. At the knees of his trousers, to be exact.
Huh?
You saw how worn and wrinkled they were. They spoke of hours of burrowing. Burrowing in the cellar. But what for? By tapping on the pavement, I found that the tunnel did not stretch out to the front. Where then? We strolled round the corner, you remember, and there stood the City and Suburban Bank, abutting our friend's pawn shop.
Of course, yes.
The inference was clear.
Yes, but how did you guess that he would make his attempt tonight?
Perfectly simple, Watson. Perfectly simple. The offices of the Red-Headed League closed this morning. Mr. Wilson's absence was no longer necessary. The tunnel was completed. But it was essential that Mr. Clay should use it soon, or it might be discovered. Tonight being Saturday would be ideal, as it would give him 2 days for escape. QED. And there you are.
Your reasoning is perfect. A long chain, and yet Every link rings true.
It saves me from ennui. These little problems help me to escape the commonplaces of existence. Yes, after all, l'homme c'est rien, l'œuvre c'est tout. As Flaubert once wrote to George Sand, man is nothing. His work is everything.
A fascinating story, Dr. Watson. What a thrilling time you must have had during the days you lived with Sherlock Holmes.
Well, I can't say I was ever bored.
And now, Dr. Watson, how about a hint about next week's story?
Next week's story is laid in that colorful, dangerous, and decidedly mysterious section of London known as Limehouse. It tells how Holmes, by investigating a corrupt councilman and the activities of a large tropical bird, laid bare one of the largest dope-running outfits in the history of the Port of London. I call it the Affair of the Politician, the Lighthouse, and the Trained Cormorant.
The makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman. Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Affair of the Politician, the Lighthouse, and the Trained Cormorant. If you wish to attend the Sherlock Holmes broadcast in New York, see your local Clippercraft dealer, and he'll tell you how to obtain your tickets. Cy Harris speaking for Clippercraft Clothes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. Makers of Clippercraft Clothes for Men and 924 leading retail stores from coast to coast present the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character of Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the dramatizations are by Edith Miser. And now for our weekly visit to the familiar firelit study of our old friend, Dr. Watson. We open the door and find the good doctor on his hands and knees, rummaging through a travel-worn and battered tin dispatch box. Great Caesar's ghost, don't tell me that's the one, the famous box containing the records of Sherlock Holmes' unpublished cases.
It is indeed, Mr. Harris, it is indeed.
But I thought that was supposed to be kept deep in the vaults of the Bank of Cox and Company of Charing Cross.
Oh, not during the war, it wasn't, thank heaven. The bank was hit twice, you may remember. Yes, at the very beginning of the late unpleasantness, the government evacuated this box, along with several other notable British documents, such as certain Shakespeare folios, to a safe place in the country.
Oh, I see. And they've just been returned to you now? Why the delay, Doctor?
Well, would you believe it? They told me these papers were too valuable to be in private ownership. They claim they belong in the British Museum. I told them they could put these records in the British Museum when Holmes is safely buried in Westminster Abbey.
A great many years from now, let's hope.
Amen. Yes, I've been going over these files to see if I couldn't find our subject for tonight's story. Yes, I, I think I can do no better than relate this one. The one to which Holmes invariably referred as the affair of the politician, the lighthouse, and the trained cormorant.
And now to get back to the politician, the lighthouse, and the trained cormorant. What exactly is a cormorant, Dr. Watson?
A largish bird, Mr. Harris, that is inordinately fond of fish, which it dives into the water to catch. The word cormorant is of French derivation. Cor meaning raven and marin meaning marine.
Oh, yes, the raven of the sea. Sounds vaguely sinister, Dr. Watson.
It was, Mr. Harris, it was indeed. This particular cormorant, whose name was Tika, was directly responsible for the death of the disreputable old baggage who... there I go, getting ahead of myself again. To begin at the beginning, it was a cold, wet November night. A Saturday night, to be exact. Holmes, overcome with the restless energy which sometimes burned inside him like a seething volcano, had insisted on a visit to the Port of London, the Chinese section of it that is so often referred to in tones of awe and terror as Limehouse. We had just turned off West India Dock Road. Against the sky rose Limehouse Church, the one thing of beauty in a sordid landscape. Yellow and brown men pattered by on slippered feet. Strange voices, whispering in strange tongues, crept out of dark corners. The air was heavy with the stench of betel nuts, shandu, and fried fish. A clinging mist crept in off the river. In the channel, a foghorn wailed like a lost soul. Holmes, what's the point of all this meandering? First up one dilapidated alley, then down the next. I'm frozen to the bone. Let's get home before someone slits our throats from behind.
Nice trick if it can be done, Watson. No, a stab in the back, or perhaps a bit of thuggy with a fine silken cord would be more in keeping with this neighborhood.
What's the good of all this prowling about?
But, Watson, we promised Mrs. Hudson we'd bring her some tea. Some Sui Sen in little 2-ounce packets at 7 pence each. A shy little tea to fill the hour of 4 to 5 with delicate scents and dreams. The slop she's been giving us lately is enough to rot the lining of one's stomach.
Well, then, let's buy the stuff and go home. That is, if you can remember where the shop is.
It's just across the crazy bridge up ahead there that leads to the Isle of Dogs. A small spice shop run by my good friend Sam Ling Lee.
Well, then, let's go there and get it over with.
Impatience, Watson, is the curse of our Western civilization. Always in a hurry. Never taking time to taste, to savor. Really, to observe life.
Oh, what is there worth observing in this godforsaken district, I'd like to know?
Quick, Watson, let's duck into the doorway.
You dirty little thief! I'll fix you!
Good Lord, Holmes, that man was chasing her with a stiletto. After them, down the next alley.
It's too late, Watson.
Great Scott, Holmes. Aren't you going to do something?
What is there to do, Watson? That poor, tortured soul. She's better off dead.
Holmes, you are a cold-blooded fish. At least we could try to catch the man who stabbed her.
That is a job for the official police. We must leave something for them to do, you know. Incidents like this occur every day in Limehouse. No, the individual I'd like to bring to justice is the real murderer in this and 100 other cases.
Who's that?
The purveyor of little white packages like the one that poor frantic derelict clutched so tightly in her hand. The chief of the outfit, which peddles death and decay in the form of exotic dreams.
You know who he is?
Naturally. The annoying part of the situation is that I've been completely unable to persuade any of his victims to testify against him. They're all so tragically dependent on him for his filthy wares. Oh, but enough of that. What you've just witnessed is commonplace. But here comes something I think you'll admit is rather unusual, even in Limehouse.
Yes, what do you mean?
Look there, across the street, Watson. Ever see a man take a bird for a walk? It's Paru, the crippled Lascar, taking Tika for his nightly outing. They're coming down the steps of the house across the way.
They're crossing the street. That's a curious-looking bird. It waddles like a duck, but its beak is different. Its neck is almost as long as a swan's.
That, Watson, is a cormorant, a very intelligent biped. In many tropical countries, the natives train them to catch fish.
Do not fear, my beautiful Tika. The men will not harm you. Paru will protect his Tika. Careful. Here the stones are sharp.
Well, I'll be...
Undoubtedly, Watson. Paru couldn't be more attached to Tika if he were his own son.
But did you see the bird's eyes? They shone yellow in the light of the street lamp like a cat's.
Yes, many of the natives hereabouts are afraid of the bird. They say he has the evil eye. Perhaps that's why Paru and Tika are considered star boarders at the lighthouse across the way.
The lighthouse?
It's the name of the most notorious lodging house in all of Limehouse. Chinese, Lascars, and East Indians sleep there, 10 and 12 to a room on the bare floors or on mildewed mattresses. Tika and Paru sleep curled up in a closet on the top floor. At least they have privacy.
Yes, charming place. Why in heaven's name don't the authorities clean it out?
Authority around here, Watson, is Harry Hawkins. Called Handsome Harry by the natives because he's so definitely the opposite. Mr. Hawkins not only owns most of the houses in this area, he's councilman for this district.
Yes, but surely it's not good business to let your property go to rack and ruin like that place across the way.
The lighthouse, Watson, is run by a vicious old reprobate who's known as Mother Fishface. Partly because she has no teeth and a cold and fishy eye, and partly because she runs a fish house in the kitchen under the steps, where she dispenses decayed fish and chips at tuppence a portion to the poor starving wretches who inhabit the rooms upstairs. Mother Fishface is the only one who dares talk back to Mr. Hawkins. She's the only one who dares to be late with her rent. In fact, it's rumored that she has something on the old boy, and he's definitely afraid of her.
There's where the body's buried, eh, Holmes?
Or how he procures the opium and hashish he undoubtedly deals in. I suspect most of her boarders are smugglers of the vile stuff.
So we came down here for the purpose of buying tea for Mrs. Hudson, and now we suddenly seem to be interested in a dope-running outfit. Holmes, you don't fool me for a moment.
5 years' association with Sherlock Holmes seems to have sharpened your powers of observation, my dear Watson.
Well, you...
Quiet, Watson. Quick, slip behind this wall. Here comes Mr. Hawkins on his weekly collection rounds.
Open up here. Saturday night. Rent's due.
Here's your money, Mr. Hawkins. Bless you.
Charming fellow, Mr. Hawkins.
Quiet, Watson. He's about to knock on the kitchen door opposite. Let's see what happens at the lighthouse.
Hi there, Mother. It's me, Handsome Harry. Come to pay you a visit.
What do you want, you old fool?
What would I want, dearie? It's Saturday night, rent night. You're a week behind now.
Supposing I am. You ain't starving. You can wait, can't you?
Now, old girl, you know I wouldn't press me old sweetheart. Here, look, I brought you a present. A fine bottle of gin.
What's wrong with it? Is it poisoned?
Oh, have your little joke, won't you, dearie?
No, I don't think you'd do a thing like that, Harry. The day they find me murdered, that's the day you'll wish you'd never been born.
Oh, you do run on. If anything was to happen to you, you know it'd break me heart.
Wouldn't it just? Here comes that cripple and his bleeding bird. It's always sneaking into me door and making away with a fish.
Them birds has a weakness for fish.
Well, if he don't keep out of my kitchen, it'll be the weakness that finishes him. Hey, you there, Paru.
Yes, Madam Fishface.
Keep your dirty bird out of my kitchen. And don't you call me madam.
My Tika is not as dirty as your kitchen. And as for your fish, I would not feed it to a swine, much less my beautiful Tika.
There he goes, sticking his head in the door. Here, get out, you.
Stop.
Go on.
Stop. Do not raise that broom to my Tika.
Not raise the broom, is it? Listen to me, you slimy heathen. That bird comes into my kitchen once more and I'll wring his bleeding neck.
You listen to me, Madam Fishface, and listen well. You touch one feather of Tika's beautiful neck, and I will kill you. I will kill you dead.
Now, that's enough. I'll have no one threatening Mother Fishface.
You heard what he said. You heard him. There. Out he goes, out of my house. Let him sleep in the streets. Let him sleep in the gutter with his dirty bird.
No, Mother, don't you get your dander up. Go on in and drink your bottle. That's a good girl. It's Saturday night, remember? You got a little spree coming to you.
I know what I'm doing. No one has to tell me.
Come, Tika. We do not enter her filthy premises again. We go sleep in the churchyard. It is warmer than Madam Fishface's heart.
Well, that little commotion seems to have resolved itself, eh, Mr. Holmes?
I wonder. At any rate, the fog's lifted a bit. We'd better get around to Sam Lee's place before he shuts up his shop. I could do with a dish of hot tea.
A dish? It'd take a gallon to warm me up.
Well, come along, then. It's no good loitering at Mother Fishface's door any longer, Mr. Hawkins. I fancy she and her bottle are locked in for the weekend.
Oh, and Brady... Oh, it's you. And what is the eminent Mr. Sherlock Holmes snooping around here for, eh?
Snooping? My dear Mr. Hawkins, you underrate me.
Dr. Watson and I were merely enjoying the local color. You have such lurid local color in this district, haven't you?
Delicious. A true Lapsang Souchong. Smoky, with a suggestion of a true tarred rope flavor.
Not bad. Could do with a spot of rum in it, though.
Typically British reaction, Watson. The Englishman's always insulting his palate and desecrating his tea with surpluses. Cream, milk, rum, even nasty little pieces of lemon. At any rate, the libation served its purpose. It's thawed you out.
I've drunk so much tea, I'm awash. My back teeth are practically floating.
But mind, you look less blue around the gills.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't use that expression, Holmes. Brings back that horrible old woman's face. You see, she did look like a fish, you know. A dead fish. Hello. Look out of the window. Here's handsome Harry running down the street.
Yes, seems to be headed in this direction. Yes, here he comes.
Oh, Mr. Holmes. Oh, thanks. Thank heavens you're here. And your friend, too. I think you said he was a doctor.
Yes, I'm a medical man. What seems to be the trouble, Mr. Hawkins?
You better come right away. She'll be needing you. No mistake.
Who'll be needing home? What's happened?
It's Mother Fishface. After I'd finished my collections, I went back to tell her about the plumbers coming in on Monday. But the door was locked, and she wouldn't answer.
Probably the result of too rapid absorption of the bottle you left behind.
You're right here. Not answering the door wouldn't upset me most times. Only tonight, there's a great smell of gas leaking out around it.
Gas? Hurry, Watson. Let's hope we're not too late.
Here we are. Two steps down. Careful. Top one's loose.
Smell of gas. Very pronounced, eh, Holmes?
Quite. Door locked.
Shall I break it down?
Window's quicker. Stand back. I'll use this loose brick.
Phew, what a stench. Stale fish and gas.
Give it a chance to clear for a moment.
I say, there she is, Holmes. You can see her lying there behind the table. But what's that draped across her leg like a snake?
It's not a snake, Watson. It's Tika's neck. The bird is doubtless lying beside her, hidden by the body.
Tika!
Come on, over the sill we go.
Tika! Did someone see Tika? I look everywhere for him. I am asleep on a grave, and Tika sits on the tombstone. When I wake up, he's gone.
He's in there, Paru. I'm afraid we've come too late.
Tika, my beautiful Tika. She has destroyed him.
All right, come in, all of you.
I kill her. I slit her throat.
Paru, put away that knife. Take the bird outside. Try artificial respiration. Don't waste any time. Watson, you look out for the old woman.
My pretty, my beautiful Tika.
Here, I better turn off this here gas jet on the stove. It's wide open.
Don't touch it. But confound it, did you have to do that?
Well, you didn't want to asphyxiate a lot of us, did you?
No, but I did want to examine that handle for fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
It's no go, Holmes. I can't bring her round. She's turning cold.
Yes, gas poisoning. That's what finished her. Unusually florid face. Gas poisoning complicated by cerebral thrombosis brought on by alcohol and high blood pressure.
Yes, I noticed the uneven dilation of her pupils.
Yes.
Poor old dear. One never knows, eh, Mr. Holmes? Who'd have thought the next time I saw her, she'd be lying there like that, cold as a mackerel?
But if she wanted to commit suicide, Mr. Hawkins, why was only one gas jet open? Why not turn on the lot, eh, Holmes?
I doubt very much if it was suicide, Watson.
You don't mean it's murder? But the door was locked. No one could have got in.
Well, that's right, Mr. Holmes. She never gave no one the key. It must have been accidental. Or at least that's what it was supposed to look like.
What brings you to that fascinating conclusion, Mr. Hawkins?
It was that bird what did it, mark my words. Time and again he knocked that gas jet open. Always her mother fish face would scream at him and shut it off. Only tonight, like as not, she was too drunk to notice.
Drunk from the gin you brought her?
I always brought her a bottle of gin on Saturday nights. It was that dirty Lasker did it. Knew what him say he'd kill her. He knew she'd be drunk. And he shoved his bird in here. He did it, knowing he'd turn on the gas, reaching for a fish frying on the stove.
Yes, there was a fish on the stove. But it was not frying because there's no frying pan. If there had been, the gas would have been lit and there'd have been no chance for it to escape and fill the room. Yes, there was a fish on the stove, carefully draped across this handle. You'll notice that it's still greasy and smells rather strongly of mackerel. These scratches, I imagine, were caused by the bird's beak as he snatched at the fish, thereby pushing the handle and opening the jet.
Well, that's what I said. That dirty heathen pushed his scrawny old bird in here, knowing Mother Fishface was lying helpless drunk with no way of protecting herself.
And how did he manage to push the bird in here with all the doors and windows locked?
Oh, I see what you mean. And it couldn't have been murder. It was accidental, like. The bird flew itself in.
And how did he manage to do that?
Oh, through that little trapdoor. Up there beside the window. It's got a little swinging hinge to it. So's the fish peddler could deliver fish through it when Mother Fishface wasn't home. That blinking bird, he flew up there, he did. Shoved open the trap and flew down into the room. What happened next was just like you deduced it, Mr. Holmes. It must have been. Poor old Mother Fishface, murdered accidental by a bird.
Very interesting theory, Mr. Hawkins, but unfortunately it does not jibe with the facts.
Yes, what do you mean, Holmes?
Simply this, Watson. The bird couldn't have flown in because it so happens that this particular member of the feathered tribe is an Anopterum harrisi, or Harris cormorant, which occurs only on the Galapagos Islands. It is entirely flightless.
You mean it can't fly?
Not any farther than Dr. Watson.
But it did get in here somehow, Holmes. You'll have to admit that.
Quite. The cormorant was introduced into this kitchen by the only person, other than old Mother Fishface, who had the key to that door.
Who's that?
You, Mr. Hawkins, the landlord.
Rubbish. Why should I be wanting to kill the old girl? She was my best tenant.
You killed her because you suspected she was going to split to the port authorities. You got wind of the fact they'd sent me down here to get her story.
You can't prove it. You can't prove a blasted thing. Supposing you have got my fingerprints in that gas jet. Dr. Watson here is witness to the fact that he saw me turn it off.
Is that so, Holmes?
Yeah, but you'll not find my fingerprints in the lock or in the doorknob, neither.
I wondered why they were wiped clean. You were here earlier this evening. Your fingerprints should have been on the doorknob.
Well, they ain't now. You can't convict me on that.
What about the odor of fish that clings to your hands? Too bad you chose mackerel to lure Tika. Such a smelly fish. Furthermore, the notes on the papers which Watson discovered inside the woman's bodies...
But Holmes,
I convict you of conducting a despicable and entirely illegal trade in opium, another... Why, Mr. Hawkins, where are you going?
Oh, I'm getting out. They won't get me. No detection and lay hands on me.
Holmes, why didn't you stop him?
He'll be stopped, never fear. The authorities have had the place surrounded ever since we left the tea house. Sam Lee is my go-between. Or didn't you guess?
You know dashed well I didn't. Furthermore, I don't know what you're talking about when you mention the papers I found in Mother Fishface's bodice. There weren't any papers.
I know, Watson. Bluff. Pure bluff. The important thing is Hawkins thinks we've found those papers. It's remarkable how talkative the average criminal becomes once he thinks the jig's up. The port authorities should have no trouble in finding out all they want to know. Yes, at last, the chief of this dope-smuggling ring and the cause of untold human misery will be safely behind bars.
Mr. Holmes, did you hear that?
Yes, it's Tika. I thought Paru might be able to bring him round. You see, he didn't have as much alcohol in his system as Mother Fishface. Let that be a lesson to you, Watson.
You go to blazes.
Dr. Watson, did they succeed in convicting the handsome Mr. Harry Hawkins?
They did indeed, Mr. Harris. They did indeed. Mr. Hawkins spilled the beans, as you say, with very little persuasion. As a matter of fact, Mother Fishface did have quite a few incriminating records tucked away carefully, which we subsequently found.
Hidden in an old teapot or the family flour barrel, no doubt.
Hidden away in a vault in the bank in Threadneedle Street, together with a very handsome collection of English banknotes.
Thrifty old gal. Who inherited the money, Doctor?
Holmes saw to it that the money went to the Limehouse Mission for stranded seamen. He also arranged for Paru to spend his declining years there. He even managed to wangle a permission for him to keep Tika perched on the foot of his bed.
I guess there's nothing that can't be done if Sherlock Holmes sets his mind to it.
I agree, Mr. Harris. Of course, I wouldn't want Holmes to know about it.
When did Holmes first suspect that Hawkins had murdered old Mother Fishface, Doctor?
Oh, he was pretty sure of it, Mr. Harris, when he realized Hawkins had run for a doctor without first stopping to break a window or turn off the gas.
In other words, Hawkins was taking no chances the old girl might come to.
That's about the size of it.
And now I wonder if you'd like to give us an idea about what we can look forward to next week, Dr. Watson.
Well, now, let me see. I think that next week I'll tell you how witchcraft suddenly came to life again in the west of England, and how the investigation of a fairy ring in the grass and a weather-beaten broomstick covered with medieval recipe for flying ointment led Holmes to one of the most diabolical criminals he ever encountered. I call it the Laughing Lemur of Hightower Heath.
Sounds appropriate for what is practically Halloween.
Why do you think I chose it, Mr. Harris? Why do you think I chose it?
The makers of Clippercraft Clothes and 924 leading stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is produced and directed by Basil Lochran, with special music by Albert Berman. Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by Alfred Shirley.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio.